Boker Tov, everybody. Nice to see everybody. I don't know how many people, maybe today already people aren't working. A lot of things closed down early. Okay. Let's continue from, in the Siddur. Of course, we have, always try to connect a little bit to the Parsha. So we do have a little bit, I think, the idea of prayer in the Parsha. Anybody want to tell me where you have the idea of davening, perhaps, in the Parsha?
Well, I haven't seen that.
I shouldn't start with a question right away, but,
Yes. Yeah. So,
Excellent. Vayhi bayamim harabim ahem. At the end of the chapter 2 is after a long, long time, and Paro died. Vayamet melech Mitzrayim ve'enchu b'nei Yisrael min avodah. And the Jewish people, they translate here, groaned because of the work. Vayizaku, and they cried out. Batal shavatam Elohim min avodah. And their cries went up to heaven. Vayishma Elohim et nakatam. And God heard their cries or their moaning. By Iskor Elohim et Brito, he remembered his covenant. Right. Of course, the Torah doesn't tell us that they prayed exactly, but the Vayizaku, that's the idea of they screamed, they cried out to God. And that is a form of prayer. Or if you want to put it more eloquently, in a sense, this is, you know, prayer without words. Which is sort of, you know, we've discussed before how Rav Soloveitchik says that's the whole notion of shofar. We pray with words. We all know words. We discussed this. Words are confining. Words can't, we can't express ourselves fully in words. You know, prayer emanates from the heart, not from the lips. So the lips is just the mechanism to try to express what we have in our heart. So Vayitaku, and they cried out, they didn't say anything. And we know that, and that's why the Rav Soloveitchik explains, we blow shofar, we say the words, okay, do this, forgive us, help us, you're the king, all, et cetera. And then we don't know what else to say, so we're just going to blow. We're going to blow out. And we know that the shofar is crying, that the shvarim and the true are this sighing and wailing, the two different forms of crying. And that's why, our shofar has those sounds. The tekiah is the cries have to be surrounded by sort of a confident, upbeat sound. The tekiah is not a sound of crying, but the shvarim and the trua has to be surrounded by the tekiah. But those are the crying. So that's what you have in this week's Parsha Vayizaku. They cried out to God, and that's a little bit of a form of prayer. Of course, they didn't really know how to pray. They didn't know about Elohei Abraham, Elohei Yitzchak, Elohei Yaakov. They did a little bit. That's next week's Parsha Vayera. Shmi Hashem, you know, I appear to your forefathers. That's what God tells Moshe. But of course, and we know that Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are the originators, so to speak, of prayer, with the laws of prayer derived from Chana, something we haven't really discussed much, but hopefully in the future weeks we'll have an opportunity to discuss that. Okay, so we left off at, we finished last week, HaKomel Chasadim Tovim L'Amo Yisrael, God who, that last of the Brichat HaShachar, the long bracha, the dual bracha, Gomel Chasadim Tovim, we want Chesed to be good for us, not all Chesed is good, sometimes the kindness, too much of something good is sometimes bad, but we also explained at the end, Gomel Chasadim Tovim, that we want Chesed. We don't want to get safe from, we're bankrupt and now we, got on bankrupt. We want to not get bankrupt in the first place. The Chasadim should be in good things, not bad things. Okay. And we discussed the Yetzer Hara and the Beiral, the bracha, the bracha is really going into in the business world as we're about to enter in the day. And that's where you make your mark as an observant person. The Beit Midrash and the shul doesn't, it's not so hard to be an observant Jew in shul. Maybe it is hard, but it's a lot easier than out on the, in the marketplace. That's the true mark of a Jew. The true mark of a person's character is what we see them in business and how they conduct themselves in the hustle and bustle away from the spiritual anchors of the shul or the Beit Midrash. And that's, of course, that's the essence of being a Jew. Betoch ha'ir, 50 tzadikim betoch ha'ir, 50 righteous people in the midst of the city. If Torah doesn't have an influence, if it doesn't impact on us on our day-to-day living, it's really not so worthwhile. What does it accomplish? So that's, it's always, that's the tension we have today. That's the struggle. How do we bring Torah into the marketplace? But, for sure on an individual basis, that's what we got to do. Okay. That was last week's discussion, more or less. Now we continue. Hiratzoma Fanecha. So I don't know, in my Siddur, it's printed in small letters. I don't know if it's printed in your Siddur in small letters. I'm using the Koran Siddur. May it be the will of your God, right? We had that also at the beginning of the bracha. So here you have it again. So first of all, you notice something. It's a private prayer. It's very unusual. It's not written in the plural. We know that all our prayers are We don't pray for health for us. We pray Rofei Cholei Amo Yisrael, that all the Jewish people shall be healed. We always pray in the plural. It's not a nice thing to pray for yourself only. We betoch Shar Cholei Yisrael, but all our prayers are in the plural. So we'll get in a moment. This is written in the private. Okay. So where does this come from? So let me share my screen. This comes from a Gemara in Brachot. This prayer appears in the Gemara, which is part of our prayers appear in Tanakh and part appears in the Gemara. So here it is. Okay, so the Gemara in Brachot tells us, I think it's a series of 9 prayers. It tells us, it has the same format. Rav Elazar batar de mesayim slote. Rav Elazar, when he finished praying, batar means afterwards, slote is praying. When he finishes prayers, at the end of prayers, which probably means at the end of the Shmoneh Esrei, right? So the Gemara gives off a list of series of prayers that people used to see, most of which we don't do, but some of it we've, as you'll see, have been incorporated into our Sidur. So Rav Elazar prayed, Yehi Ratzon Mefanecha Hashem Elokeinu, right? Same thing. Teshkeim Bufreinu Ava V'Achva V'Shalom V'Reyut. We discussed this, I think, in our second class, that God should put among us Ava Achva Shalom V'Reyut. Sounds like a wedding, you know, Gila Rina Ditza V'Chetva Ava V'Achva Shalom V'Reyut. But it is. It's the love. Our relationship to God is, of course, compared to a wedding, the bride and the groom, God and the Jewish people. But we also discuss v'ahavta l'orecha kamocha, that before you daven, I think based on the Ariya, they say you should have the notion to love your neighbor, because how can we approach God asking him for things if we don't have a relationship with our neighbor? Ben Adam l'chaveiro is the prerequisite for Ben Adam l'makom. So the first thing he prays, we should have love and companionship and peace and friendship among their people. Okay, we're not going to go through all of them, but just to show you, it's interesting. Rabbi Yochanan, who is the leading Tana in the land of Israel. Rabbi Yochanan is the first generation after Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the first generation of Amorim. All the Amorim, sort of the key ones in Israel, were his students. He was the Chevrut of Reish Lakish, famously. Rabbi Yochanan, we discussed, had a tragic life, lost 10 children, but he lived a very long life, and he's the most important, apparently, of the Amorim, I would say, in the land of Israel. But okay, we shouldn't be embarrassed. This is a sort of, in a sense, a negative prayer. We should be saved from negative things, which I guess what I just said makes a lot of sense. But God have mercy upon us. So you can see, in a sense, that I think the personal idea here, titazer b'chaninatenu, listen to our, you know, pleas to you, etc. Then Rav Zeira said, he's a shorter prayer, shalom nechta, we shouldn't sin. That's it. Our prayer, we should be good. Help us, God. We need it's up to us, but help us a little bit. And we shouldn't be embarrassed. We shouldn't be embarrassed for our parents. That's an interesting idea. I remember Ozer Glickman, Alev HaShalom, was talking about combining business and Torah. I know Rabbi Ozer Glickman, who was Rosh Yeshiva at YU, he was also the director of, I know, global operations for CIBC. I think he was the third person after the CEO, like number 3 in the hierarchy of CIBC, which is one of the big banks in Canada, Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce. He worked in the business world for many years. He's a brilliant person, became a Rosh Yeshiva at YU afterwards, a fascinating person. But we had the pleasure of having him for Shabbos a number of years ago. Unfortunately, he passed away. He dropped dead. He keeled over a couple of years ago and whatever. It's very sad. But he was in the process of setting up a business ethics institute. And this was his life, you know, combining Torah and the business world. But he would always say that if you're not sure to do, always say, remember he told us, when he was in Toronto, I had him speak at chat. He came guest speakers and he spoke about how Wayne Gretzky was their client and CIBC and all the things, you know, that kids would be interested in. His interesting stories from working at CIBC and being a Rebbe, but he would tell them, he told the high school kids that, you're not sure what you're doing is right or wrong. Ask, what would your mother say if she saw you doing it? That's all you have to do. You go through life asking, what would your mother say? And you're going to act in a very appropriate way. So shalom, we shouldn't be embarrassed. Avotenu doesn't, obviously I'm interpreting not just as our fathers, means our parents, our ancestors, that we should live up to what is expected of us. Okay, but that's just, it's a very short, It's not, we shouldn't be embarrassed, not in general, that's of course true, but we shouldn't be embarrassed. We should live up to our parents. I don't want to get, guilty, whatever, but there obviously that has to inspire us. Then you have Rabbi Chia, that Torahcha umenatenu. Torah should be our life, you know, our main occupation should be in Torah. Okay. And then here we go. This one, so those you never heard of. I mean, when you learn Daf Yomi, so you study them, but who ever heard of those prayers? Rav is the, Rav is a contemporary, sort of, I guess, of Rav Yochanan. Rav and Shmuel are the first generation of Amorim, but Rav lived in, he came from Bavel, then he came to Eretz Yisrael to study with Rav Yehuda Nasi, the editor of the mission. Then he went back and he established Torah in Bavel. Rav is probably the most important Amora, period. Without Rav, there probably wouldn't be a Babylonian Talmud. He came to Bavel, and the Gemara relates how pathetic, how sad the religious situation was in Bavel. Jews were totally ignorant and not observant, and Rav really recreated Jewish life, and he established the yeshivas in Surah, and he, that first generation, his contemporary is Shmuel, and Rav Yochanan was sort of his contemporary in the land of Israel. Anyway, so he has a famous thing. Remember, this is every day. The Gemara doesn't say, but when they finished davening, and this was the prayer they would say, so we, of course, recognize this from the Rosh Chodesh Bensing. So this is interesting. This got transferred from the daily prayer of Rav that we say now once a month. That should be a wonderful month. It's a beautiful prayer. It's long. All the good things that we want. This way, Sheimale Komi Shalom Levenu Litova. That's Gomel Chasidim Tovim. God should fulfill our desires for good. Sometimes we pray for the bad things, as we discussed. Okay, and then here we go. Rebbe, this is our prayer. So we say this every day in the Siddur, but before we daven. In other words, remember, you know, we're in the pre-davening stage. Davening is Shmon Esrei. Everything's just the lead up. So we said Birchat Hashachar. We thank God for walking and standing up and getting to see and having shoes, etc. And then we go into the business world, and then we have the prayer of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the final editor of the Mishnah. And okay, so now we can do the prayer in the Siddur. You'll notice, by the way, that in the Gemara, it's in plural. Yiratzom afanacha Hashem Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoteinu, plural, shetatzileinu, you should save us. May say, azupanim yetzirab. It's interesting. In the Gemara, it's said in the plural. In the Siddur, they transferred it to the singular. I don't exactly know why. Maybe we can, I don't know, give some theory. Then Gemara continues. I just want to show you Rav Safra, his prayer, and what's his prayer? And then Rav Alexander. Then we have one more prayer that we should be familiar with. This is Rava. Rava is a fourth generation Amora, right? There are six, seven generations of Amorim. There are six, seven generations of Tanaim. Then he wrote the Mishnah that ends in the year 220. And then you have, by the fourth generation, we're talking now, the mid fourth century. That's what we're talking about in terms of chronologically. So there's very little Torah in the land of Israel. You know, the first Rav Yochanan's generation, there's still Torah, Rav Yehuda Nasi, but it's waning. That's why they had to write the Mishnah. The Romans have taken over. The Jews are not sovereign. It's not so simple. But the fourth generation, really, Torah is almost predominantly in Bavel. This is the Rav and Abaye, you know, the famous arguments between Abaye and Rava. So he says, this, again, apparently every day after he davened, Elokai lechelon atzarti eino kedai. God, you know, I'm not worthwhile. What did you create for me? I'm a sinner. Now that I was created, it's like I wasn't created. I'm not living up to my mission. Afarni b'chayai, I'm dust when I live. How much more so when I die? I'm like full of embarrassment when I come to you. I'm so don't live up to my potential. God help me, I shouldn't sin. And what I did sin, erase it. And of course, you probably should recognize this. This comes as the Gemara itself says. And this is where Rav Hamanuna would say on Yom Kippur. Rava said this every day. But Rav Hamanuna said on Yom Kippur, and that's, of course, what we have it. Our Sidur We say that our machzor, that's the we put that in our machzor at the end of Shmoneh Esrei in the Ila. I believe we only say that at the Ila. So it's sort of a last plea, you know, God, you created us, we're not living up, but have mercy on us. Okay, that's just the general to know. It's very interesting to see. And again, you see the fluidity of the prayer book that we have lost in many ways, unfortunately, right? We've discussed that a number of times. The prayer book, it's from the heart. We can't have fixed words of prayer. That it's an oxymoron to fix the words of prayer. It's not at all what prayer is, but we have no choice. We have no choice. What can we do? People wouldn't know what to pray, what to say. So we therefore did fix the, have a fixed sitter. And of course, as we mentioned, the Shmoneh Esrei remains silent. So you have that possibility to add in your personal prayers. That's okay. So let's discuss what he says a little bit. May may be the will, our God and God of our fathers and mothers. You should save us today and every day. So it's interesting that was not mentioned in the Gemara. That bechol yom. The Gemara just says today. Bechol yom may azay panim umay azut panim. So what's azay panim and what's azut panim? Are they different? Anybody want to say? What's azay panim and azut panim? So how do the English translate? Arrogance. Us panim is someone who's arrogant, right? We know that, okay, so let's take that we know the quality of coming, the most important, well, it's hard to say the most important quality, but let's say the only quality of Moshe Rabbeinu that's mentioned is humility, that Moshe was an Anav. But we assume Anav and Azut Panim are opposites of each other. Mm-hmm. So if you take a look, let's take a look here now at the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. I think it's a well-known Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avot, Yehuda ben Tema Omer, right? Yehuda ben Tema says, "Have az kinamer, be as strong as a leopard, kal kinesher, swift as an eagle, ratz kitzvi, run like a deer, gibor ka'ari, and as ferocious or courageous as a lion, lasot ritzon avicha shebashmain." Okay, so here, az is something very, very positive, right? You should be as strong as a leopard. Now, I don't know who's stronger, a leopard or a lion. I assume a leopard is stronger than a lion. No, I assume a lion is stronger than a leopard. A leopard is quicker. I don't know exactly, but anyways, you don't want to get in a fight with the leopard either. But you should be as strong as a leopard, the way you run God. In other words, I assume fearless, quick, right? Etc. So here, az is used in a very, very positive sense. Then, in the same Mishnah, Yehuda ben Tema would also say, az panim, one who has az panim legehenim, a person who's an az panim. How do they translate it? The arrogant, okay? It's, of course, that doesn't capture it. Panim, it's the face. Az is strength, the strength of the face. Legehenim, you go to Gehenim. Uboshet panim, one who is Hashem. Like Gan Eden, you know, I just mentioned the prayer. Okay, great. So I just mentioned that the prayer of Rosh Chodesh. So one of the things we say in Rosh Chodesh, Chaim she'ein b'hem busha uchlima, right? Chaim shalosha b'chavod. We don't want to have any shame or embarrassment. So I think I mentioned once before that in certain editions, certain communities, they used to say Chaim she'yesh b'hem busha uchlima. They would pray for bu. Now it's two different things. One is to be embarrassed. That's a terrible thing. One is to have shame. A sense of shame is good. The Gemara says that the three character traits of a Jew are Rachmanim, Baishanim, and Gomlei Chasadim. That the Jews have three character traits. It means that Jews are supposed to have three character traits. It doesn't, it's not a racist comment that we're born this way. It means that what it means to be a Jew is to be Rachmanim, to be full of mercy, Baishanim, to be full of shame. To be embarrassed to do so. You don't act. How would your mother, what would your mother say? You don't act in a certain way. There's a sense of shame that we've lost today, of course, and Gomlei Chasadim. And we do acts of kindness so much so that the Gemara says, if you meet a Jew who doesn't have one of these character traits, You should say maybe they're not really Jewish. Maybe their grandmother, you know, who had an illicit relationship. And you know, it's like an amazing Gemara. Like, again, the Gemara is telling us, not telling us, you know, that she had an illicit relationship. Gemara is saying it cannot be that a Jew doesn't have one of these character traits. So busha, it can depend on how it's used. It can be a positive or a negative. That's always the beautiful concept in Judaism, right? Everything is a fine line. You know, it's nothing is good or bad. It's all the application of how we use it. So shame can be shame in a positive sense and can be embarrassment in a very negative sense. We know to embarrass somebody in public is considered worse than murder. The Binyan Sion thing mentioned, Rav Yaakov Ethlinger, he's not the only one. But Rav Yaakov Ethlinger lived, he was a Rebbe of Shishman Falhurst, lived in, you see it in print, I have it here. It's like mind-boggling. He has a responsa. Responsa means practical halakha. You know, when rabbis have, people have a question, they ask the rabbi, what do I do in this situation? So he asked, if I have to embarrass somebody in public, what do I have to do? So he says, you have to give up your life. What do you mean, what do I have to do? Gemara says it's worse than the murder. So obviously, you can't kill somebody to save your life. So you can't embarrass somebody to save your life. This is like in Ripley's Believe It or Not. The consensus of most authorities is we don't accept this view. But the fact that such a view exists should give us pause. Before, and when the Gemara says it's worth it, I don't know if it means one time. It means a person who on habitually, like Gemara says, one who talks Lashon Hara, you know, terrible. Everybody talks Lashon Hara occasionally. It's last night's shiur, you know, Jews didn't talk in Mitzrayim, whatever, but it means a habitual, a Baal Lashon Hara, a master, a gossiper, etc. So here you have the same thing. Aspanim, on the one hand, Aspanim Likahenim, in the same Mishnah, We should be as strong as like a leopard, but if we're arrogant, and I guess it means us, see, one is us to be strong and one is aspanim. Aspanim in the face, it sort of implies, you know, it's not who you really are. You know, it's the impression you give off. I don't know. There's something about the person's, how they live. And aspanim, one who's arrogant, goes to Gehenna. And of course, what is that? Why does a arrogant person go to Gehenna? Well, what it means, an arrogant person, in other words, is much more likely sin. What does it mean Moshe was the most humble person? Well, why do we talk about Moshe's humility? Because when you see greatness, you become humble. You know, when you go to the Grand Canyon, wow, you're awed. Whenever you see something amazing, you're awed. So Moshe is the only person. He faced God of God. He was blown away. He saw God. Oh my gosh. He was like, so of course you become humble. I mentioned, you know, I mentioned Wayne Gretzky. So you play hockey. If you get to meet Wayne Gretzky, I'm dating myself, of course. I don't know who's Connor McDavid. I don't know who are the Gadolin today in hockey. Matthew, what's the guy in the Leafs? Matthew, I forget his name. All right. Anyway, so if you get to play hockey with these guys, Lahavdil, so you're blown away. It makes you a little bit humble. You meet a great scientist. You meet someone who's really great. It makes you humble. So Moshe, meeting God, became the most humble person. And therefore, you realize how much more you have to grow, that as great as you might be, you know, I thought I was a good hockey player until I played with Wayne Gretzky once. And oh my God, he like, you know, went around. I was like, I lost everything. So I meet God. Oh my gosh. So you realize what the Lahavdil, what it's like. So one who's arrogant is never going to learn. I'm saying everything's obvious and we all know this, but sometimes the most obvious has to be said the most often. But when the person's arrogant, they're not willing to learn. They're not willing to hear from anybody. I know it all. So that's when he goes to Gehenna. It's not that arrogance is worse necessarily than other sins of person. It's not even a sin. It's a character trait. It's just it leads to sin. Arrogance is much more likely to lead to sin because when a person knows it all, you know, no one's going to tell him. So that's what the Mishnah says. As panim likahenim, as used in a proper way, that's the way to worship God. But an as panim goes to Gehenim, and a boshet panim goes to Gan Eden. Okay, so but it's interesting. So the first prayer of Rebbe says, the first thing, I shouldn't be arrogant. That's what, Yiratzon, you know, I finished now all the standard brachot that everybody says. This is really a personal thing. We saw it. In other words, and again, it emphasizes the idea of adding your own personal prayers. Today in 2021, 2022, next week, everybody can add their own personal prayer, not just in Shmoneh Esrei, wherever you want. We shouldn't lose that. I think we've so much taken that away, the idea to pray from the heart and to use your own words and to pray in any language. The Mishnah and Sota is very clear that tefillah can be done in any language. God understands everything. You don't have to worry. That there was debates in the 19th century with reform, you know, English, German, well, it wasn't English, but German, you know, whatever. So those are political, religious, you know, the tenor of the time. How appropriate is it to pray in English or French or German in Parliament? That has nothing to do with the concept that prayer can be done in every language. That's a Mishnah directly in, that's a Mishnah in Sota, actually. Okay. Anyway, so that's, then he says like this. Okay, now azepanim and azupanim is the two. So the commentaries explain we shouldn't have it, and others shouldn't have it towards us. In other words, we shouldn't be arrogant towards others, but we also pray that we shouldn't come in contact with arrogant people. We don't like, you see someone arrogant, it's a big turnoff. But again, if this is prayer, we're going on into the business world, right? That's how we explain. This is an add-on to the prayer Hagomel Chasidim Tovim Lamo Yisrael, which is our way of, you know, as we're going out into the world. When you also add in the fact that this is Rebbe, that's, I believe it's here in this Be'erei HaTfilah by Rabbi Wogelmuth, who taught the Siddur for many years at Maimonides, a close student of Rav Soloveitchik. He taught the course that was in, everybody in Maimonides had to take, I don't know, for 1 year or 4 years, I'm not sure, courses on Tfilah. That's very few schools have that. Then they put out a book. So I believe he explains that this is Rebbe. Remember, who's Rebbe? Besides, and why is Rebbe the editor of the Mishnah? Well, why him? I mean, besides historical time period, Rebbe was a very wealthy man. Came from very wealthy. We know that. It's a misconception to think that all the great achievements in Jewish history were basically done in periods of wealth and tranquility. You can't write a Shulchan Aruch. You can't write a Mishnah Torah if you're, you know, worried about pogroms. It's very difficult. Yeah, sometimes people did, but generally the great works of Jewish literature were written when people didn't have to worry about pogroms. So Rebbe Yehuda, now that's why they wrote the Mishnah. As life was getting worse, they realized they really, really needed it. But Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi, we know, had very good relations with the Romans. Just like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in a sense, Antinonis, the Gemara has many, many stories. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, we know it's in there. There was an understanding Rome is a powerful empire. I won't even get into theology of it, that perhaps this is God's will. I mean, that, you know, did you remember for the Talmudic rabbis, they saw the destruction as a punishment for the Jewish people. When they say Sinat Chinam or the various reasons they give, they understood that what Sinat Chinam caused the Beit HaMikdash to fall. I mean, it leads internal strife, major, easier to take over. But the rabbis are not discussing the historical ideas. Just like in Egypt, you know, why were the Jews slave in Egypt? They're not discussing historical ideas. They're very important, but that wasn't relevant to the rabbis. The rabbis are interested in religious messages we can take. So the rabbi is saying, what message should we learn from the destruction of the temple? It doesn't mean why was the temple destroyed? And it's a mistranslation, really. The rabbis, now that the temple was destroyed, what can we learn from this? So we should learn, you know, we better get along better as a people. We shouldn't have internal strife. We're going to get that be easier to be captured. But it's not so much that's the cause. The cause, Romans were very strong. They wanted to capture the world. Whatever. The reasons don't contradict each other, but the rabbis focus. So so there was an understanding among the rabbis that when nations took over, that was God's will and we should work for them. It's a very, again, I don't want to get any political thing, but you know, we all know the Jewish tradition was, You pray for the welfare of the government. I showed you last year in Pirkei Avot, the tefillot. You get an old sitter from Russia. Their prayers for the Tsar. They prayed for the Tsar. Whether they meant it, it didn't matter. They understood that they had to work with the Tsar. You know, and today, I know the rabbi in Russia is very close to Putin, whatever you think of him. That was the Jewish thing, that who's ever in power, we defer ourselves to power a little bit. Again, I don't want to get into a Zionism and the new Jew. Oh, great, but not this is not the forum for that. And but on a religious level, there is something to think about. So it was not uncommon. Again, Rabbi Akiva thought, you know, differently. Rabbi Akiva, he believed in the Bar Kochba revolt. Other rabbis didn't. You're never going to have one opinion. It's always like that. But Rebbe himself had very good relations with the Romans, and he understood. So he claimed that this is Rebbe's prayer, that in dealing with the Romans every day, you know, he wanted to be, say, you know, they're a little bit arrogant. I should be arrogant. And he's nervous, as we're going to see, you know, from a din kasher and evil judgment or whatever. That's that, what they explained. But anyways, this prayer is again is said in the time period a couple of generations after the temple is destroyed. And okay. Anyway, so Azupanim, that's just to always write that. That's why these were the personal prayers. We always pray for things that impact us on a personal level. Anyway, okay. Adam ra, chaver ra, shachein ra, pega ra. What's all this? So you should be safe from Adam ra. What's the difference between an Adam ra and a chaver ra?
I guess you're more likely to be influenced by a chaver ra.
Okay, so I would say, very good. Okay, I would say an Adam Ra means a bad person. By the way, what's the definition of a bad person? What's the definition of a tzaddik? I love. Let's say something very upbeat now. Easy, I know, easy to do, but it makes it life easier. What's the definition of a tzaddik according to the Rambam? It's in Hilchot Tshuva. The Rambam writes this in Hilchot Tshuva. You know, it's a popular, that's one of the most studied sections of the Rambam, you know, before Yom Kippur. Why do we have, the Rambam writes this at Tzaddik? So the Rambam writes that Tzaddik is 50%. Everybody, the Rambam begins, everybody has a veirah and mitzvot. Everybody sins, everybody does mitzvot. Afilu rekanim shembahem, we just had that in Daf Yomi 3 days ago. Even the empty, reket, well, there's a discussion when you read the Megillah and Reket, the 14th, whether the wall cities, Reket is Tveria. So why is it called Reket? So it's a play on words, Rekanim. Even the empty ones are full of mitzvot, like a pomegranate, like the seed. So that's a beautiful, even you say hello to somebody, that's a mitzvah. There's so many ways we have to do mitzvot. So everybody has mitzvot, even if they don't intend to do mitzvot. And everybody sins. Whoever has 50% plus one, mitzvot is a tzaddik. You don't have to be perfect to be a tzaddik, right? Of course, the reverse is also true. You have 50% plus one of a rot, you're a rasha. But we don't know. It's not adding, like, first of all, we don't know ourselves. But even if we did know, they're qualitatively different mitzvot take on different importance and et cetera, et cetera. But an Adam Ra would appear to be someone who is bad, just a bad person. You have nothing to do with him. But being in you work in the environment with people, you work with him. So, you know, a Adam Ra, somebody, whatever, we know what, a person who's a negative influence. A Chaver Ra is your friend, but your friend who's bad for you. In other words, Adam Ra, he's not necessarily your friend. A Chaver is your friend, but we all know that. how many people get into trouble because of who they hang out with, who their friends are, when you're teenagers, the most important thing, the biggest influence in their life is their friends, not their parents. At some point, maybe it's their parents, maybe before, afterwards, but while they're teenage years, everybody knows that, their friends have the biggest influence. They may be great friends with them, but they may be not a good friend to have. It's very hard, so you have to be saved from friends, and even sometimes your friends may mean well. But it's not a good friend for you. So you have an Adam Ra, that's in general, a Chaver Ra, and a Shachein Ra, and a bad neighbor. Like a good neighbor, Allstate, is there, right? Remember that commercial for Allstate Insurance? Okay, sorry about that. A good neighbor, right? So you have, and now again, a bad, it's like neighbors, you know, okay. Neighbors don't have the same influence as friends, but we're all influenced by our neighborhood. And of course, you don't want to have a neighbor that you have to fight with. You know, good fences make good neighbors, but you want to have, we should be far away from a bad person, a friend who's bad for us, that's why I would translate it, and a neighbor and who's not good for us. So I just want to show you just an amazing halacha in the Rambam. It's like one of these mind-boggling halachot, not like, you know, I don't know what planets we're living on, like I don't know anybody who, let's take a look at the Rambam. So this is the Rambam in Hilchot Deyot. So you know, the Rambam, this wrote, it divided Jewish law into 14 books. And the first book is Sefer Mada, the book of knowledge, Mada, right? Science, knowledge. This is quote unquote the most controversial of his books. That's where he discusses in the beginning, I don't understand metaphysics, and that's where he says is learning Gemara is a little small thing. Yeah, Havayat Abaye Rabba, the arguments of Abaye Rabba, that's like, yeah, Davar Katan. Masei Merkava, physics, metaphysics. Oh, that's big stuff. Science and philosophy. That's what you should spend your time on. So, there wasn't, not so many people like that necessarily. But the Rambam in Hilchot Deot, I don't even know how to translate it. Here, the human disposition, knowledge. This is where the Rambam gives his health advice, how to live our life, the golden mean, beautiful ideas, you know, our character traits that we're supposed to develop. So the Rambam here writes, Derech Riyato Shel Adam Niot Nimshach B'Deot Masav Acharei Avachavirav. It's normal. It's human nature. It's impossible. We are influenced in our thoughts, deot, and our masim, and our actions based on your friends and your neighborhood. I grew up in Canada. I think a particular way. Americans slightly different. Okay, Americans and Canadians, not so different. But Israelis, different. It's a different culture. That's, you have to know, Europeans, a totally different culture. That's always been mentioned. You know, that's one of the very most important things about a posik. You have to have a rabbi who is from your country. In other words, who understands your lifestyle. If you go to university, have a PhD, don't ask your shaylos to a rabbi who is opposed to going to university, believes in kollel. It just doesn't make sense. And if you're in kollel, don't ask your shaylos to a rabbi who is at YU. It just does. I mean, in the, whatever, you know, but you understand what I mean. It has to be someone who's from your country. You understand we're all influenced and that's life. That's normal. Therefore, so therefore you want to be close to people who are righteous and wise people. So I can learn from them. You got to run away from evil. Like, you know, but then the Rambam writes here like this, unbelievable. So you have to live with people. I love that. Everybody always says that. If all the countries, all the neighborhoods that you know about and they have influence, they're all really bad moral neighborhoods. Like in our times, you know, it's always we're always in the worst. We're not always the worst. You cannot go to a place where the leaders are good. You need a place where you have moral leaders. That's the most important thing about our political leaders. They should be moral and integrity. You can't go there. You can't travel. There's a travel ban. No flights. You got to live alone. You can't go at the marketplace. Quotes a verse from Echa, Lamentation. We sat alone by Edom and we were quiet. You know, the destruction, there's nothing left. The great city had nobody there. And people don't even let him sit in his house alone. They drive him crazy. They have all these rules that he's got to do and he has to be with them. So you know what you got to do? You have to move to a cave. Marot, you have to move to a cave. Lachavanim, I think, is a cliff. I think, or the desert. You've got to move to the desert. But they're a chatim. Do not live with sin. It's like I don't understand. I mean, I read the words of the Rambam, but like I'm blown away. Like, what? You're going to move to a desert? Move to a cave? You know, got to move to a cave. So the truth of the matter, now you begin to understand why certain Jewish groups have totally ghettoized themselves in the modern world. They're not crazy. I mean, whatever. It's not my lifestyle. I don't think that's the way of Torah, but I understand where they're coming from. They're afraid they're going to be so negatively influenced. Whether it works or not that's a totally different question. I mean, it's an important question whether it works, but that's not the question. In other words, if you want to understand the idea, that the Rambam is very clear. So it depends how literally we want to take this idea. You know, I always think it's, I remember, I think I mentioned this once, you know, when I was on the board of our kids, you know, school, of the elementary school they went to. The school was basically whatever, modern Orthodox religious Zionist school, you know, whatever that means. So it means the kids all come from, you know, modern Orthodox homes, whatever that means. Shomer Shabbat. So they basically had a policy. They wouldn't accept kids who were not Shomer Shabbat. So I thought that's a terrible policy. I think that's a horrendous policy. Believe me, if they had that policy, Avraham Avinu wouldn't have, you know, we all know this. Yes. Standards again. It's just, I'm talking the modern world. I'm not talking about the, you know, television sets, those schools. I'm talking about in our world. And I fought for, you know, that I said there should be, most people think I'm crazy, but there should be a policy. We should aim to get 25% of the school non-Shomer Shabbos in the school. Beautiful. Maybe, you know, everybody's concerned what the influence they'll have on us. What about the influence we'll have on them? You know, my wife often tells me where she went to school, there are many, many kids in her grade who were not observant. The school, it was the school a little to the right of the modern Orthodox school, sort of not, whatever. And, many of the kids who came from non-from homes and weren't from even while they went to school, eventually later in life became observant. There was something they gained from that Jewish education that impacted on them years later. So I think that's in, you know, we're always concerned on the negative influence others have on us, but we should also be look at the positive influence we can have on others. So you have to know yourself. Are you going to be, you know, different people? Some people are willing, can hold their principles when it's, you know, even in a weaker environment, and some people know are greatly influenced. You got to know yourself. You got to know yourself. Do you have to get a wise, quote unquote, or should you be out there, you know, doing whatever, reaching out to people? So it's like all these prayers, like everything in life, it's complex a little bit. But here, Rebbe is just praying he should be saved from negative influences. He's out in the world. He's dealing with the Romans on a daily basis. There's an Adamra, a Chavara, a Shachenra. And that's, by the way, it's interesting. One of the Meforshim, the Otzar HaTfilot, you know, Siddur, one of the classical commentaries on the Siddur, he says, this is, of course, we have in Pirkei Avot. Here, I'll just show you very quickly, which we know, the Mishnah we did last year. Where are we going here? Pirkei Avot. So here, this is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, right? His students, right? What's the good path a person should have? Ayin tova, chaver tov, shachen tov. So we have here a chaver tov, and we have here a shachen tov. That's the most important. And what's the really bad thing? Well, what's the bad thing? Ayin ra'ah, a bad eye. I'm sorry, a chaver tov, a chaver ra, and a shachen ra. But we don't have Adam. We have Chaver and Shachin. Chaver Tov, Shachin Tov. So he says the obvious. What's an Adam Ra? Adam Ra means Adam Tov is an Ayin Tova, and Adam Ra is an Ayin Ra'a. In other words, you see from the Mishnah, the Mishnah talks about Shachin and Chaver. So the Ayin Tova, the definition of a good person, is somebody who has a good eye, and the definition of somebody who's a negative person is somebody who has a bad eye. What did we discuss last year? What's a bad eye? Generally jealousy. In other words, I look upon other people. You give that person a look. So an eye tova, or you give that person a look. You're so excited to see them. You're so happy. Wonderful. You're gracious. You're willing to share. That's an eye tova, a good eye. And an eye ra. So that's the definition. It goes better than ra, but that's what he explains. Adam ra means, ayin tova, a good eye, being gracious to others, looking upon them favorably. Okay, so you want to be safe from Adam Ra, see our environment, so to speak, Chavera, friends, but are not good for us, and Shachin, and our immediate neighbor, they all do influence. Pegara, something out of the blue, a pega, you know, a pigua, you know, an attack, is something we should be safe from surprises, negative surprises, so to speak. Satan Hamashkit. So this is very interesting. Satan Hamashkit. How would you translate Satan Hamashkit? Anybody want to give that a try? The Satan. So that could be the state of Israel. The Satmar Rebbe felt that the state of Israel is this. I don't say that as a. I mean, obviously it's not our view, but that was his view. The state of Israel, modern Zionism, is a Satan. What does a Satan mean? It's very interesting. We don't talk about it so much. Satan ha-mashchit. Mashchit is to destroy. Hashkata bal tashchit. You can't destroy things. Hashkata, even to shave with a razor. That's also a form of hashkata. Bal tashchit. What's Satan ha-mashchit? So I don't know what a Satan is. So therefore, you know who else doesn't know what a Satan is? So I looked in like four Siddurim. I was curious. How did everybody translate Satan HaMashkit? So the RCA Siddur, I don't have it here. It's a relatively new Siddur put out by the Rabbinical Council of America. It just came out, I don't know, a year or so ago. I don't know how its traction is with the Koran. It's going to be hard to replace the Koran. First, the Koran had to replace the art scroll. And now whether they're going to use the art scroll. But it's an interesting Siddur. It took many years of work. So the art scroll Siddur translates Satan HaMashkit as a corrupting Satan. So I don't know what a Satan is, but I know what corrupting is. So we don't want to be corrupt. When you deal with politicians like Rebbe was, that's important. Korin says adversary. A satan is an adversary, a destructive adversary. Okay. Meaning, so they've taken away, you know, the satan, we think of angels or, you know, it's much not real. It's like spiritual idea. So an adversary is much more concrete. Okay. I found that. And then the art scroll or the, what I read here, the art scroll, I love this destructive spiritual impediment. Yes. Satana Mashkid is a destruct. Now, listen, translations are impossible. There's no, that's why we mentioned last week, I think, one of the 3-day fast when the Torah got translated in Greek, the rabbis, that's a Sar Bateva. That's the other reason we've had the first of the Slichot. We talked also about the Babylonians surrounding, putting a siege on Jerusalem, but we first talk about they translated the Torah in for 3 days and darkness descended. But again, this is other things, all how it's used. Translations are terrible. It's awful. We have to fast and cry, and translations are necessary. We have to cry even more, or we can rejoice. In other words, without the art scroll translation of the Gemara, the 300,000 people a day learn Gemara because of art scroll translation, and probably the art scroll translation led to the Koran translation. It's unbelievable. Everything's translated, but it's not so good. There's a lot of negative things, and of course, nobody has to learn Hebrew anymore. That was talked last night, the importance of Hebrew. What do I have to study Hebrew for? I'll just read it in translation. We all do that. I do that myself also sometimes. I too quickly, when I'm reading a Gemara that's a little bit difficult, when I was in yeshiva, so I had a Jastrow next to me, Talmudic dictionary, I looked up every word and I figured it out and I sat there for half an hour. So now I'm a lazy butlin. I'm not going to waste my time with that. So I just look up in Safari, how do they translate it? But that's bad. I mean, it saves me time. But so anyways, art scroll, so every translation has its own commentary. Destructive spiritual impediments. The Hirsch Siddur, which of course he didn't translate. I mean, Hirsch didn't write a commentary on the Siddur, but they have his comments that he puts. He said, whoever translated the Hirsch Siddur, anyways, he would have translated it into German. He wouldn't have translated it into English. The Hirsch Siddur has an evil hindrance. Okay, whatever it is. So, and by the way, I noticed this book, Entering Jewish Prayer by Reuven Hammer, when he translates a paragraph, he leaves that word out. He skips over it. He just doesn't translate it. You know, bad influence. Okay, anyways, Satana Mashkid. Now, let's, but whether a Satan is some out force or whatever it is, or it's internal, it's ours. I actually think the art scroll translation maybe gets it the best. Destructive spiritual impediment. In other words, something that holds us back from doing what's right. Whether it's an outside force, an internal force, I don't know. I don't, you know, an evil hindrance. Okay, very good. Now, din kasheh, bal din kasheh. From a bad judgment, a din, or a harsh judgment. Baldin kasheh, a harsh litigant. A baldin is a litigant. Ben shu ben breed, whether he's Jewish, whether he's of the covenant, ben sheino ben breed. So there are two ways to understand this. A din kasheh. Either it's talking about, Rabbi Yehuda say, I don't want to get into a court case. I don't want to go to court, a Roman court. I don't want to, once you go to court, you never know what's going to happen, right? And Kahneman in his fantastic book, Thinking Slow and Fast, the Nobel Prize winner from Israel, you know, he said, a prince, a phenomenal book, Thinking Slow and Fast, whatever. So he discusses because of risk averse, right? When we lose something, it's at least twice as painful as when we win something. If we make $10,000, we feel happy. If we lose $10,000, we're twice as sad, as happy as we would be for $10,000. That's at least, that is human nature. So people have risk intolerance. So he said that plays very much into our legal system because, you can think somebody, some small guy sues a big company for $100 million. Chances are 95% you'll win the case. But you know what? I'll settle with him for $1 million. I don't want to take that 5% risk. Once it gets to court, I don't know what's going to happen. I have a 5% risk. I'm going to lose $100 million. I'm willing to pay $1 million to get rid of that risk. It's not really fair because, or you have to figure out how that works. But in other words, about din kasheh, okay, let's forget my psychology here, but about din kasheh means you don't want to din kasheh. You don't want to go to court. Once you go to court, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen. And about din kasheh, everybody, you know, a good lawyer, a good litigant, you're in trouble. So that's because the courts are not always, I can't do human. Only God can do justice. There's only Dan Yechidi. You can't judge alone. Only God. We do our best. It's a very hard bar, which is why some of the commentaries explain this is talking about the judges are making this prayer. A judge says, I don't want a hard case to come before me. I want a case to come before me that's easy to solve. Because if a hard case comes before me, I might make a mistake. And if I make a mistake, like I told you last week, the shochet doesn't want to be a shochet anymore because he's afraid he's shechted by mistake and hundreds of people are eating non-kosher food because of him. Okay, that's life. It's not so terrible. I mean, make a mistake, an honest mistake. Okay, we have to live with it. But so we pray that we shouldn't be in a situation where even a mistake happens to us, because there is this notion that we don't want mistakes, that even the animals, right? God, even the animals of tzaddikim are our spirit. Pinchas ben Yair's donkey wouldn't eat tray food. That's what the Gemara says. Anyways, but okay, we're not Pinchas ben Yair. So that's what some say, to be saved from a din kashen, about din kashen. It doesn't matter if he's Jewish or not, Jewish, non-Jewish. And when it comes to court, you know, we're supposed to go to only a Jewish court. Unfortunately, it's a big problem we have today, a huge problem. If you look in the sources about what they say about going to a non-Jewish court, your hair will stand on edge. It's gotta be among the worst sins there are. Just look in all our, Ela Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifnehem, right? You have, these are the laws before you, Lifnehem Velo Lifnehakim. You're not allowed to go to a non-Jewish court. And obviously in capital cases you are. Moshe Feinstein has lots of truths about this. Can you work for the IRS and sue people? He says, absolutely. If a Jew is cheating, you can get the government. We're not talking about that. We're talking about two Jews have when we have a state of Israel run a, you know, then of course we want everything to run through a banking system. But here in, you know, America, whatever, you have two Jews fight, but to be debating the level of Dayanim have to be, the honesty and integrity is very high. But the prohibition of going to a secular court is very severe, very severe. Now, it could be some, unfortunately, again, some of the Jewish courts are not worthy of the name. And sometimes you have no choice. That's for sure. Church. Again, that's not, this is beyond our discussion. It's a serious, it's an important issue, but you have to, you have to be very concerned about the integrity of our court system. Is very important. That's why the Gemara says that a true judge becomes kol adam din emet lamito, becomes a partner with God in the process of creation. That's real Torah. That's the real application of Torah. So I'll just end. I'll show you one last quote about the how not to go to court, why we shouldn't go to court. So this is a Gemara. We're talking about why the temple was destroyed before. Okay, so the Gemara in Bava Metzia, it's talking about lost objects. This is Perek Eli Metzia. That's what I'm sure many of you, when you first were introduced to Gemara, but that was on page 21. So you didn't get the page, you know, 30 when grade 4 or wherever they introduced Gemara Eli Metzia. Shalom Eli Metzia, Ve'elachayev Lachris, what you need. But later on in the chapter, quotes a pasuk right before Matan Torah. It's a pasuk in Yitro. God will show us the path that we should walk in. So the Gemara says, Gemilu Chasadim, the derech is kindness, Yelchu is to go visit people who are sick. Bikur Cholim Ba is go to the funeral. Maseh, action is to go to court. Asher Yasun Zulifni Mishurta, the intact before court. We discussed to avoid court, to compromise, whatever. We don't have time now to get in what Lifni Mishurta means in its full complexity, but the idea of compromise, acting before you go to the Shurat HaDin, before you get to court. The judgment is harsh. The judge can't take into account any social factors. But in a compromise, you take all those social factors that don't have legal standing into consideration. Sometimes the law is harsh. You cannot consider, they're poor. It doesn't matter. It's totally irrelevant. But in a compromise, those are important factors. So that Gemara goes through it. And then the Gemara just says an amazing idea. I'm sure many of you know it, but it's worth repeating. Dama Rav Yochanan, the same Rav Yochanan we had before. Lo charva Yerushalayim ela shadana batin Torah. You know why Jerusalem was destroyed? It was only destroyed. Ella. The only reason Jerusalem was destroyed, because they followed the law. They judged according to the laws of the Torah. Wow. So the Gemara is like blown away. Well, what? Ella dine dim migzitu l'dino. So what should they do? They should do the judge's whatever they feel like it. Well, what are you talking about? That's great. They're doing Din Torah. I said, no. Shemid name al Din Torah below of Duli Fnimashurta Din. They just followed the legal principle to the law, to the letter. They didn't act beyond the law. Which, of course, there's the Torah law, but sometimes you've got to go beyond the Torah, because the Torah law is abstract in general cases. But sometimes in the two people in the case, even though you could win in a court of law, you have to go lifnim mishurat din. You got to go beyond the call of duty, do more. So the temple, our society was destroyed because they followed the Torah to the letter. It's an amazing mark. You follow the Torah to the letter, you can destroy Torah. You can destroy Jerusalem. We lost Jerusalem. When a society is so litigious, when they fight about everything, a society cannot exist. So you have to have lifnim mishurat din. So that's what Rebbe's praying for. Every day you work in the business world, court cases left and right. So you want to be in a society, you want to be where you can avoid court. And when you avoid harsh litigants, and when there is a court case, the judges want to pray. That's something, you'll have a judge who can, the case is not hard to decide. And we have to be careful. Jews, non-Jews, doesn't matter. We discussed already to steal from a non-Jew is a lot worse than stealing from a Jew. All the examples is, I don't know, some people have this idea, you know, steal from the goyim. I understand that they grew up in Europe and persecution in the pre-war and the Holocaust area where the non-Jews mistreated Jews. It is true. Rav Shach used to tell us that all the time. Of course, you grew up where they have discriminatory laws against Jews, so the Jews can discriminate back. Obviously, if they pass laws that only Jews pay tax, so you can cheat on that tax. That's not cheating on tax. The government's cheating you. The problem is that we took that attitude, which may have applied in certain parts, we applied it to America. The Machut shall chesed, as Rav Moshe describes it. Obviously, we're dealing with, yes, no, America is not perfect, Canada's not perfect, but it's the most perfect systems we have. And like Winston Churchill said, democracy is the worst form of government except for all others. You know, it is what we have. It's and our justice, there is justice here. And therefore, you know, to cheat a non-Jew is much worse because of the idea of a chilul Hashem. It's your gezel akum, of course, is forbidden. But anyway, so we want to, whether the Jew, non-Jew, honesty doesn't have any boundaries. Okay, let's just quickly review. And then, okay, we discussed, of course, that prayer we have already in this week's parsha, but it's a chilul Hashem. They called out to God. Prayer can come with no words like our shofar. Okay, then we have this extra prayer of Rebbe. So we show the Gemara has at least 9 different rabbis. Every time when they finish, this is like a post prayer. We say this one pre-prayer, but at like we say, Elokai Neshmesh and Tad Asay Leman Shmecha. We didn't even see that one, right? The Elokai Netzor on our language. So that was this was. So Rebbe Yehuda, different people at different prayers, personal often their life. Rebbe had this prayer to be saved from Azepanim, Azupanim. We discussed that Azupanim, like everything, shame and embarrassment, they're the same, but they're very different. And Azupanim and Azkanamer, be as strong as a lion, and arrogance are very different. They're in the same mission. It's all how we use it. It's how do we use our power? How do we use our self-confidence? Can we be self-confident is wonderful, or are we arrogant? And therefore, one who's arrogant won't listen to others. He's going to end up in Gehenna. One who's humble, he sees greatness. When you see greatness, Moshe saw the greatest of the great. So you could become the most humble, and then you realize you have so much to learn. So then you're going to end up in Gan Eden, that fine line. Then we discuss Adam Ra, different things. Adam Ra, Chaver Ra, Shachin Ra, different influences. We have friends, or perhaps even they're friends. We like them, but they can be bad for us. They don't mean bad necessarily. And then we have bad people, and that can be sometimes the line. Also, the line between a tzaddik and a rasha is very narrow. And neighborhoods, and the Rambam's wild, wild halacha that you have to live in the desert if you can't find a good neighborhood. I know. On the other hand, we have to always find when are we being influenced, and when do we have the opportunity to influence others in a positive sense? And then the idea of the importance of we want to avoid legal disputes. Lifnim mishurat hadin, the importance of acting beyond the letter of the law to avoid judgment, because once we have judgment, it's fighting and everybody stands for the law. Obviously, many times we lifnim mishurat hadin has limits. Of course, we don't just let somebody punch you in the face and get away with it. Obviously, if somebody sees, of course you go to court. That's not what we're talking about. We all know that. You have to find that fine line between when we go to our legal requirements and when we go to lifnim mishurat hadin. If we don't find that line, we risk destroying. We risk losing our country. That's what the Gemara says. Lo charva Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was destroyed because of this too much fighting, not the willingness to give up on our legal claims. We live in a society where not enough people are willing to give up on their legal claims. Okay, we didn't get to Olam Yedam B'Seter. We'll please God discuss that next week. And let me just see if there are any questions. More mitzvot in Averot, right. So the many, no, yeah, it's, oh, the Rambam has a lot of things he didn't follow. The Rambam says you should sleep 8 hours a day. He didn't sleep 8 hours a day. The Rambam said, yeah, most importantly, the Rambam said you're not allowed to live in Egypt. That's Allah in the Torah. So there are apparently, I'm not expert enough in the field, but I mean, there are apparently handwritten, they have, you know, these manuscripts of the Rambam where he writes at the end of when he would write something, I violate three provisions of the Torah every day. Every day, because he lives in Egypt. The Torah says you're not allowed to live in Egypt. So I remember, people know in Toronto, I believe, David Kashitsky was the valedictorian many, many years ago in Ur Chaim. And I believe his valedictory speech was he explained why the Rambam didn't violate the prohibitions of living in Egypt, why it only applies to a community, going back, all kinds of reasons why he didn't violate. But it is interesting. But people do as I say, not as I, what can I do? Nobody's perfect. But the true matter is that the Rambam didn't have a choice. He was born in 1148, 1148. The Almohades invade. That's the Taliban or ISIS of the day, really, that's what it was. It's fanatical Muslims and, convert or death. And they fled to Morocco. And Morocco was a good place, as far as I know, to live as a Jew. And then there was nothing in Israel. They went to Egypt and became the doctor of the royal palace. So yes, and there was a big community in Egypt. That's what the Rambam writes. He had a big community, a lot of Jews there. So I don't know, but sometimes we live, the Rambam's writing, remember the Mishnah Torah is written as a halachic code for the ideal world. The Rambam is the only codifier who writes about halachot that were not applicable in his time, the laws of the temple, the laws of sacrifice, the laws of political leadership. But that's how we end. So the laws of the Messianic era. Right, that's where the Rambam famously writes the Messianic era. The same thing, only peace. I don't want to say only peace. The only difference is peace. That's it. Once you got peace, you got the Messianic world coming. That's why the Lubavitcher Rebbe thought the Gulf War would usher in the Messianic age. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. But the Rambam is writing an ideal, unlike the Shulchan Aruch, the Torah, nobody else did that. Everybody else just wrote the halachot of their time that applied to them. So the Rambam is writing this idealized world of the wonderful communities. Obviously, in the real world, it's not always possible. Yes, it's hard to do mitzvot in a cave, correct? But I think the Rambam was afraid that if you were out of the cave, you'd be influenced much more to be negative mitzvot. But listen, we can never take one Rambam in isolation. I don't think the Rambam would advocate. Listen, we know Maimonides, right? Maimonides, your Maimonides, my Maimonides. The Rambam is the most, you know, everybody claims the Rambam backs them. The Reformed Jews claim the Rambam agrees with them. The Hasidic Jews, the Litvaks, the Kolo people, modern Orthodox, because the Rambam is everything. He's so complex. And you can find everything in the Rambam, and it's how you interpret it, right? What would the Rambam be like if he came to alive today? Maybe he would be like, a professor of philosophy, you know, in the university, in a secular university, without a kippah. Like, who knows? You know, it doesn't really matter. But the Rambam in this context is just discussing the influences that we all have. Okay, any other comments or think? Okay, somebody asked me privately. A bibliography for people who want a bibliography for Tila. Oh, that's interesting. The Nodri Yehuda made a Hesped for Maria Teresa. Okay, I did not know that. Wow. Okay, interesting. Okay, I can try. Yeah, it's not so hard. Maybe I'll send it out by email, a bibliography of Tila. I don't have so many books, but whatever. There is, I will say in... the one I think is the best, which is, but it's in Hebrew, is this six-volume work, Netiv Binah, of Jacobson. You remember Moshe Sokolov used his book on the Haftorah.
Binah B'Mikra.
Yeah, Binah B'Mikra is his commentary on the Chumash. So here he has a six-volume work on the Tefillah. It's fantastic. The classic work on Tefillah is Otsar HaTefillot. It's one of the classic commentaries on the bottom, but again, it's all in Hebrew. I mean, Birei Tefillah, this just came out, this works in English. I mean, all the Koran and Ars Gula, that stuff is all very nice, but it's not really comprehensive. You know, it's not as detailed. They have nice, beautiful comments. It's meant as an inspirational work. Mm-hmm. It's not the study of the Siddur, it's to inspire you while you pray, but they have good, and some of them are good. I mean, read Jonathan Sachs's introduction to the Siddur. That's phenomenal, right? If they're going to read one thing on the Siddur, in the introduction to the Koran Siddur, Jonathan Sachs, I mean, everything he writes so beautifully, but he has a beautiful idea of the Siddur. And of course, read the Rav Soloveitchik. Do I have it here? Hold on. Maybe in my room, actually, because I was reading it. Yeah, so I don't have it here. But one of the, when they put it after the Rav passed away, they all the manuscripts of the Rav. So the first one they put it was on prayer. The Rav, read the Rav stuff on prayer, because the Rav has, you know, the famous idea of the Rambam. The Rambam, we only pray out of need. And, you know, Rav, the Rav is with his philosophical underpinnings, you know, puts prayer in different contexts. It's the philosophy of prayer. It's also very worthwhile reading. I have the Avud Raham. I mean, this is this is one of the basics, but I think it's very good. I go to the Chaim Halevi to pray as a Jew. You want scholarship? Here, I'll just take what I have in my shofar. Elbogen. So this is a German Jewish scholar. I believe, I don't know if he was a Reform rabbi or not. I don't remember, but this is very, it's very good, but it's very academic. How this is development here, the period of the Piyut, a whole thing of the Reform movement outside Germany, synagogue construction, poetic editions, prayers for special dates. This is also the scholarly book. It was written in German, I believe. Of course, I read it in English and whatever. So there's more. I mean, you can read Danny Schwerber on changes in Jewish literature, what we can change in our prayers. This is very good, but it's cute. It's the little, this is the thing of the Torah Tmima, the Bar Shamar, I don't think it's a thing. So he just comments on little parts. And I get this, this is the Ktav Ukabalah,
Mecklenburg.
Mecklenburg, yeah, very good. Yeah. So he had different pieces. And of course, one of the classics, the one I support, the one who quotes everything to the Chumash, the Avud Raham, the medieval Spain, the Avud Raham. But very clear Hebrew, very, very beautifully done. So these are some of the, and I don't know, the Stota Davram, it's like a one line on top and 500 pages of copy. I haven't used this much, so much. And there's more stuff, but in English, they have the Koran, the RCA, all these German English. I picked up the Rav Kook Siddur recently, so I don't know. There's more stuff, but I hope that's a little bit. Here, where's this? Okay, that's
thank
enough.
You. Shabbat Shalom.
Okay, Shabbat Shalom. Don't want to keep everybody. Everybody have a wonderful Shabbat Sunday morning. Rabbi Liebtag and 11:15. We look forward to seeing you. We're putting the final touches sort of on our winter schedule. I think next week we'll have a couple special shiurim, which we'll sort of announce last minute. But anyways, as we're putting together stuff, so we like to hear from you. We're going to wish everybody well. And Shabbat Shalom and all the best. Okay, have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, be safe, be hello. Healthy. Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you. Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.